Commissioner Fritz go?
I have not seen her.
Okay, they're she is absent and is ultimate absent.
That was an apparition that you saw an hour ago.
That's very good. All right. Yeah. Okay, very good.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is the afternoon session on January 1st. Wow, that seems like a long time ago now.
So long.
On June 1st, 2017, Carla, please call the roll.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman. Udaly.
Here.
Fritz. Wheeler.
Here. Could you please read the one and only item for today, please? Okay.
Item 609, establish a goal to meet 100% of community-wide energy needs and renewable energy by 2050.
Colleagues, I'd like to make a motion to introduce a substitute resolution.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second on a substitute resolution. At this point, I'd like to read some, well, I'll say they're brief talking points, but they really aren't. Some medium-length talking points, and then I'm going to invite Michael Armstrong up to walk us through the substitute resolution. So first of all, obviously, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome. It's excellent to see the strong and continued interest in what I believe is the most important global issue that we currently face. Portland and Multnomah County have demonstrated that we can significantly reduce carbon pollution while also strengthening our economy, creating more equitable and just communities, even while our population continues to rapidly grow. These things go hand in hand. We've proven that. Most of our action has been through the framework of our joint city-county climate action plan, which was recently recognized by the global organization C40 as being the best and the strongest climate action plan in the world. As one of the world's most inspiring and innovative cities tackling climate change, we're here today to renew our commitment. We're committed to a bold new agenda. The years ahead, I believe, will be the most pivotal years in the fight against climate change and for climate justice. The Climate Action Plan Progress Report released earlier this year shows some incredibly good results. We're dramatically moving the needle on our environmental sustainability and climate justice goals. This is the result of sustained action by businesses, individuals, utilities, community organizations, and of course, through public policy. But we need to be even bolder in order to accomplish our goals. The City of Portland is poised to establish a goal to meet all of Portland and Multnomah County's community-wide energy needs with renewable energy by 2050, and all electricity from renewable sources by the year 2035. And this morning, Multnomah County unanimously passed their resolution establishing this goal. We're hearing from people all across the country that our work on this is already inspiring similar conversations in their communities. The resolution before you now, and the resolution that Multnomah County passed this morning, goes beyond establishing these new goals and outlines how our community can intentionally and equitably move to a 100% renewable energy future. It ensures that we're setting out on a just transition. These guidelines for a just transition are the result of an incredible amount of collaboration, and we will certainly need to continue to refine and calibrate in the coming months, years, and decades to make sure we stay on the right path. The city and the county will remain committed to partnering with our energy utilities as they help us accelerate the transition to renewable energy and minimize dependence on fossil fuels. And we'll prioritize community-based development of environmental infrastructure like the June Key Delta Center, as well as community-based development of renewable energy infrastructure. By making investments in community-facing organizations to build capacity to lead such development, we help to ensure that economic, social, and environmental benefits are led and shared by low-income populations and communities of color. All Portlanders and residents of Multnomah County will be impacted by climate change, but communities that already face existing socioeconomic and health inequities will be the most severely impacted by these risks, including children, older adults, people of color, and people living in poverty. And such communities will therefore require investments in resilience that is proportionate and accountable to these more severe risks. No matter which way the winds are blowing in D.C., our community has always continued to innovate and implement ambitious new policies to achieve a low-carbon pollution future. Now our climate leadership is needed more than ever. As the federal administration attempts to set our nation back decades, we're going to stand together, firm, and we're going to strengthen our resolve. With a clear vision for the future, we can avoid being left to the whims of fate. Thank you to my colleagues for sponsoring and helping to craft this resolution. And thank you, too, to Northwest Natural, Pacific Power, PGE, and hundreds of other stakeholders that have already been working with us to help shape this keystone policy. Also, as I'm sure you're aware by now, President Trump has decided to pull the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement, so I'll be introducing an amendment committing us to the Paris Accord. With that, I'd like to call up Michael Armstrong to walk everybody through the substitute resolution, and then we have a panel of invited guests that we'd like to have come up. And then, of course, we open up the opportunity for everybody to have their say as well. Good afternoon, Michael. And if you could just state your name again for the record and for the redundancy, because we like that.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Michael Armstrong with the City's Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. So I'll first describe the general content of the resolution, and I'll specifically call attention to the differences between what was filed last week and the substitute that you have in front of
you
this afternoon.
That's great. Thanks.
So in general terms, this resolution establishes new goals that extend and accelerate the city's commitment to renewable energy and specifically responding to climate change. As the mayor noted, the timing is quite auspicious given the federal administration's announcement earlier today. I got a phone call from USA Today this afternoon asking if the federal move changes Portland's commitment to climate change. And I suggested that they should tune into City Council this afternoon and they could judge for themselves. So there are people watching. All right. So
there you go.
There we go.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So the Climate Action Plan includes a number of objectives that address energy use. You got three here in front of you, and these are sort of the big ones to start off with. The first is to reduce total energy use in buildings, so energy efficiency investments. The second is to make sure that as we add new buildings, new homes, we're making sure they are as energy efficient as possible. And it's clear that those are building blocks. We've got to do the efficiency, and that gets us then to the third objective, which is to supply 50% of all energy used in buildings from renewable resources. So the resolution in front of you now would essentially both accelerate that goal and really extend it. So it's not simply energy used in buildings, but that it's all energy. And so the big change there is bringing in transportation as well. So the resolution proposes two goals, and the mayor laid these out: 100% renewable electricity by 2035, and then by 2050, 100% renewable energy. And so that's all energy, including for transportation, including energy we currently use through natural gas. To get to those ambitious goals, we need to create a compact, connected city. This is our comprehensive plan. This is how we're going to grow: walkable neighborhoods, well connected by transit, pedestrian networks, bicycle networks. We've got to have the shape of urban form that lets us get around easily without relying on single occupancy vehicles. We also have to deliver energy efficiency everywhere we can get it. I already referred to buildings, industrial processes as well, more efficient vehicles, appliance standards, you name it. We've got to deliver on these building blocks that will then position us to move our energy supply from fossil fuel-based to renewable energy-based. So once we've done what we can on urban form and efficiency, then we move into energy supply. And so, you know, essentially here, this is the resolution. Convert our electricity supplies to renewables. That both means adding wind, solar, some of the forms of energy I think we've become accustomed to thinking of as renewable, but it also is going to require real changes in how we manage the grid, how we deal with issues like storage, demand response. We're going to have to get a lot more sophisticated to make 100% renewable energy supply work for electricity. So ambitious, the goal for that is 2035. Then by 2050, we're bringing in all energy use. So transportation is the really big one there, but it also includes industrial processes, you know, you name it, all the other ways in which we use energy. And so for transportation, the clear opportunity is to convert to electric vehicles. You know, once we've gotten what we can out of changing mode split, let's walk, let's bike, let's take transit everywhere we can, then let's electrify our vehicles or power them with renewable fuels. And so in some cases, there may be biofuels that work. In some cases, there may be renewable gas that works. But we need to convert all of our transportation to renewable fuels. And then we need to do our best to develop sources of renewable gas and substitute that for the remaining natural gas that we're still using. And that'll be a tall order because we don't currently have sources of biogas to match our current levels of natural gas use. So that is a challenge that we'll need to keep working on. One good example of this, though, is a project that you reviewed and gave the green light to just recently, which is utilizing the biogas that's produced at the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant. We've been using it to generate electricity for a number of years now. That has worked well. We continue to have additional increments of biogas that are produced through the process. We're now partnering with Northwest Natural. The Bureau of Environmental Services has done the engineering to capture all that gas, clean it up, and be able to use it for transportation fuels. That's what we're talking about. So that's a fantastic project. We need a lot more of those, and we're going to need more than we currently are aware of. So, but we know how to do it. This points us in the right direction. So in addition to establishing these two kind of fundamental goals, the resolution spells out a number of ways in which we hope to get there. And the mayor touched on a handful of these. So I'll run through these so everyone has a sense of what's in there. It would maintain the city's commitment to using 100% renewable energy on our own operations. 100% renewable electricity. We currently do that. We'd like to do more of that with on-site resources or contracts with direct resources elsewhere. And so continue to improve how we supply that renewable electricity. The mayor referenced the commitment in the resolution to prioritizing community-based development of renewables. The resolution includes a goal of 50% utilization of MWESB-certified businesses. The resolution also includes a commitment to partner with Work Systems, Inc., labor, some of the other providers of workforce training so that we can make sure to support workers as the economy transitions into a renewable energy-based economy. We've referenced the utilities several times. They're absolutely fundamental partners in this work. Their work is both on the supply side, but also in continuing to invest in energy efficiency, bringing on the other capabilities around grid management, storage, demand response, et cetera, that are going to be required. So the utilities are key. To get renewable energy into the transportation sector, we've got to be accelerating the transition to electric vehicles, again, using renewable fuels when we can get them. We also need to be expanding our use of transit, and so that both means improving transit and then converting transit to electricity. We've got it in the MAX in the streetcar. TriMet has its first set of electric buses on order now. They'll be here, and I forget the year, another year or two, so we'll start to see that, and they are working on outlining what a full transition plan is. This resolution definitely lends a shoulder to that, to the need for that. The resolution also points to the value in green infrastructure in helping kind of manage our overall energy demand as well as making us more resilient to the climate impacts that we're already seeing. And then the resolution calls on the state to do what we need it to do where it has authorities that the city doesn't have. And so that includes adopting similar overall goals, but then also using its authority to strengthen the building code, put us on a path to net zero energy in our buildings. Same thing with appliance standards. There are opportunities to continue to make sure that all of those devices we use minimize energy use. And then finally, the resolution establishes a climate action subcommittee of the Planning and Sustainability Commission and spells out the intended participation in that subcommittee. So that's the sort of general outline of the resolution. I want to point specifically to changes that are in the substitute. And so this, I think you know, have in front of you the substitute. There are a few smaller cleanups and sort of clarifications. The major changes are to incorporate a new whereas that specifies special consideration for any biomass project to look at the full environmental impact of that project. It also includes a new whereas that is addressing the economic potential of the transition to renewable energy, but also the need really to invest in workforce training and make sure we're supporting workers through that transition and recognizing they have many of the solutions already. So viewing the workforce as a key part of the solution, that then has a companion, be it resolved, to do the partnering with workforce training providers, Work Systems Inc., et cetera, so that we can actually deliver that. And then there's a new whereas that emphasizes the importance of energy efficiency and the role in green infrastructure in helping provide that sort of lowering demand community-wide. And then a companion, be it resolved, to expand the city's commitment to to green infrastructure. So those are the sort of major thematic changes that are in the substitute.
And we're also looking at a schedule of amendments, and it looks like there are effectively 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. So
there's 5 that have effectively been included in various components. Am I reading this chart correctly?
Right. Correct. That's right. Okay. So the substitute incorporates the ones where it's labeled that they're already included. The others are different. There are suggestions that have surfaced through the process. You may want to consider them. I think you'll hear from folks today with suggestions that may be reflected in those, may be new. So we'll try to manage that as best we can. One other thing, and then Mayor, you expressed an interest in addressing the withdrawal from the Paris.
Yeah, I'm going to offer up an amendment after
your
presentation.
And I think I have the language you want for that, but you tell me when you're ready for it.
Right now.
I think it's that. All right. So let's go to that.
I'll just say this. Colleagues, I'm moving an amendment. You should all have this piece of paper. It looks like you do. I'll just quickly read it. Amending whereas, found at the top of page 2, whereas the newly confirmed EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt and the President and President Trump are making decisions that are setting climate policy at the national and international level back decades by pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement, defunding environmental programs, attempting to reinvigorate the coal industry, greenlighting major pipeline projects such as the Keystone XL and Dakota Access, attacking the Clean Power Plan, and weakening EPA's commitment to environmental justice, and then adding a be it further resolved, the city opposes the rollback of climate policy at the federal level and affirms its ongoing commitment to the goal of the Paris Climate Agreement and the city's responsibility to meet its proportionate greenhouse gas reductions for the United States under the Paris Climate Agreement. And
I will second that.
So we have a motion, a second.
And Mayor, I'll just offer a friendly amendment.
Please.
Because the way the substitute resolution, which has been sponsored by Wheeler, Udaly, Fish, and Saltzman, is actually structured as be it further resolved. So I'll just my friendly amendment is that we change the preamble to the resolve to reflect the language of the resolution.
No objection, Commissioner. No objection. Friendly resolved, be it resolved, is on the table. Please call the roll on the amendment.
Fish?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The amendment's accepted. Did you have more, Mark?
So the one thing I would leave you with, and then I think we've got some invited testimony, and then I can come back as amendments come up if that's helpful. But the one thing I'd leave you with is, you know, a list of companies that have made similar commitments. In most cases, they're around renewable electricity. So for us, that would be the 2035 goal. These companies and dozens of others leading up to about 90 total have already made this commitment. And so as we're trying to calibrate, are we being too aggressive here? What's realistic? What's achievable? I think this is an interesting list where it suggests there's some companies you might not expect to be ahead of us on this one, and there they are.
So, Michael and Mayor Wheeler, I'm going to suggest after the invited panel, Mayor, that we actually ask Michael to come up, sit at the edge of the table, and serve as an air traffic control for us, because this is a little different than our normal procedure in that we're not going to be adopting all the amendments at the front end. And I think it would be helpful to have you there to give any clarifying information as amendments are offered through testimony.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so with that, we have a panel of invited guests. And Commissioner Fish, I believe you had a request.
Well, let's do our panel first, and then I have a group I'm going to invite up.
Very good. And it looks like we have about two panels plus one person. Could you please invite up Chair Kafouri? Well, I'll just do it myself. Chair Kafouri, welcome from Multnomah County. Jameis Valdez of Northwest Seed, please come on up. And Angus Duncan, the Global Warming Commission Chair. Good afternoon. Thank you for being here, and thank you, Chair Kafouri, for the great work that you and your fellow commissioners did this morning adopting these same protocols.
Thank you. I'm Deborah Kafouri, the Chair of the Multnomah County Commission. I want to thank you, Mayor Wheeler, and the entire commission for your partnership on our joint climate action plan, and I want to thank you for continuing that partnership by adopting a very similar resolution to the one that we voted out this morning. And I especially want to thank the community. You're going to hear from a lot of passionate and interested and involved people this afternoon, and it has really been their advocacy that has helped put climate change front and center and pushing for better and more comprehensive solutions to this issue. Today's resolution is a pledge to our children's future. The people calling the plays at the federal government right now are pulling from an old playbook. They are planting uncertainty when, in fact, concrete facts exist. To deny science and the overwhelming evidence that climate change is real is irresponsible. To refuse to do anything about climate change when we have that evidence is a dereliction of duty. We can no longer deny. We can no longer delay. We must take a stand for the health of our community. We must act now for our children's future. So it is up to us. All of us in this room today, we can and we must lead. Transportation is the single largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in Multnomah County and is the single largest source of air toxics in Multnomah County. By switching to electric and clean fuels, we will have much cleaner air. But we must also act to reduce the economic and racial disparities that guarantee that those who can least afford to escape the effects of climate change will suffer the most. And I think it's safe to say that if we don't address these issues today, they will slip away from us. We may face a generation of children whose life expectancies are shorter, whose lifetime incomes are lower, and whose prospects for a better life are worse than ours. There may well come a point where the very climate we depend on for our way of life becomes imperiled. We are setting out this resolution today because we believe that a better future is possible. A future with a stable climate, a future powered by clean, renewable energy, a future where the benefits of clean energy lead to equitable economic gains for communities of color. We are pushing for bold action because our future depends on cities and counties setting the example. 100% renewables is not just a goal. It is an imperative. We must get there, and we can only get there together. 100% renewables means a future with clean air, a future with a stable climate, and a future with more economic opportunity. We can do this. This is our pledge to our children's future. Thank you. And I also want to add that I definitely support the amendment to address the Paris Agreement. The county voted on similar language this morning as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Kafouri. We appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and members of the City Council. My name is Jameis Valdez, and I am with a regional nonprofit called Northwest Sustainable Energy for Economic Development, also known briefly as Northwest Seed. Northwest Seed is, again, a regional nonprofit dedicated to the creation of communities powered by locally controlled renewable energy. And so we're very excited for this resolution that's gone forward today through the county and hopefully through the city as well. And really want to thank the staff and the leadership who has worked on putting this together, as well as the community members who have been engaged in this process. And really, this 100% renewable resolution is a critical and important step forward towards a decentralized, distributed, resilient, and more democratically controlled energy future. And going off script a little bit, in listening to what I heard just 2 hours ago from national leadership about the direction that that they would like to take our country really backwards, it was just frankly appalling and completely counter to all the facts and progress that we've seen in the last decade of the deployment of renewables. And it completely ignores the reality of the growth of new energy systems and new energy opportunities that are current here now. And I mean, just one thing that was not mentioned, and I would not have expected to be, that there's three times more jobs in the solar industry than there are in the coal industry right now in America. That's something we should be proud of. 4,500 of those jobs, according to a Solar Foundation report, are here in the state of Oregon, and we have the opportunity to significantly expand those. And so we shouldn't look, and this resolution really provides a platform to decouple the idea that more carbon emissions is somehow related to more economic growth and activity. We can move forward with a renewable energy future that provides new opportunities, new economic growth, and really more equity for everybody. And it's important that we do so. And the city of Portland, Multnomah County, is really in good company. I know we like to think of ourselves as leaders here, and we are. But we're not the first to go forward even as cities. Michael mentioned this list of a number of Fortune 500 companies, but over 70 cities globally have committed to 100% renewable goals. Even here in Oregon, Lake County is looking to be a net exporter of renewable energy. However, that's really focused on the electric sector, and the proposal here and the Multnomah County and Portland resolution is the most ambitious in holistically looking at both electricity, transportation, home and industrial heating usage, and really tying this together into a vision for a community that is powered by renewable energy. And the resolution sets forward really, I think, a good framework to really oversimplify things. It's get fossil fuels off the grid, increase energy efficiency, and electrify everything possible. And that sounds easy, but it's going to be a lot of work.
Yes.
Energy is really fundamental to our lives. Access to affordable energy should be seen as a human right. Around our community, the threat of disconnection of utility services is a real and present danger for many low-income households, and especially as we look to the summer months where there's high heat or the winter that we had, which was one of the coldest and longest we've had in a while. These are real threats. And so energy affordability is more critical than ever as we look to move forward this renewable energy resolution. And as we know, low-income households spend a disproportionate percentage of their income on energy costs. For the past century, really our energy infrastructure has been very centralized, fueled by what I'd call an underground economy. And I mean that both literally and figuratively, in that there's been little transparency, there's been centralized control, and there really hasn't been much oversight to the extraction of oil, coal, natural gas resources from our earth. And the companies that internalize profits and externalize environmental and human costs haven't really had to bear that burden. People have borne the burden and negative impacts of fossil fuels in human health impacts, climate, and the environment. In contrast, renewable energy really offers a different vision and a different future. It's largely out in the open and visible. It kind of, almost by definition, wind and solar have to be out in the air. And we can see it. The transition to renewable energy, energy efficiency, demand management, energy storage, electric vehicles, all these solutions that are being put forward are going to be very capital and labor intensive. And I say that as a positive thing. This is an opportunity. What is key is really who pays for and who benefits from this new investment. And moving towards 100% renewable energy can and should be a powerful tool to address historical disparities and tangibly increase wealth for people of color and low-income communities. How this is implemented will really be the test as we go forward in these coming decades. And the priorities should be on community-based investment, increasing resilience, and reducing the cost burden for low-income households. We would support any amendments that directly address that. Utilities will continue to play a key role in providing connections between resources and customers and ensuring the reliability and safety of the grid. But there will also need to be new technologies, new business models, and new financing mechanisms in order to implement this energy vision. Who has access to these opportunities? Who leads this process? All of those will be critical to the equity and success of our 100% renewable goals. So it will indeed, as Chairwoman Kafuri said, take all of us to join together and participate in this transition. And truly, we hope it is more than just a transition, but a transformation of our energy economy. This resolution sets a good framework for continued engagement. The hard work is really in front of us, and we're excited for this future. So thank you.
Thanks, James. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, members of the City Council. Thank you for inviting me this morning. Since the mayor and Chair Kafuri were subjected to my palette of PowerPoints this morning, I'm going to forego those this afternoon out of mercy and just offer a few general comments on the resolution. So, no surprise, the Tweeter-in-Chief has taken us out of the Paris Accords. And it is up to us in this room and in a lot of other rooms across the country to make sure that that just plain doesn't matter. If we are committed, if we are diligent, we can do that. In considering the strategies in these resolutions, it helps me at least to reflect on the city's admirable history in addressing these issues, starting with the 1979 Municipal Energy City Energy Policy that as a young and innocent staffer in the mayor's office back then, I was responsible for assembling and bringing to the council and getting adopted. The city negotiated into the Northwest Power Act of 1980 really critical considerations that still influence our choices today, including dealing with energy efficiency as a first priority resource and renewable energy as the second priority resource. Thermal energies came last in that document, and we collectively committed to doing least cost planning for electric energy. It was a first in the country, and now utilities and regulators all over the country have adopted that model. The city has been influential in shaping state and local policy on land use, on urban growth limits, on urban design. We have built toward a first-class transit, bike, and pedestrian system that people can choose now to use. We have adopted, and I was happy to play a small part in this, an aggressive city-county climate action plan, one that is not just adopted but also is implemented and tracked. And now we have these resolutions. And I just parenthetically would have to acknowledge Michael's enduring and positive imprint on many of these measures that the council has been able to deal with in the last few years. His decision to move on will be a loss to all of us. The city and the county have decisively supported utility progress toward growing the renewable energy content in our electricity supply. As I acknowledged this morning across the river, the influence, the fingerprints of the county and the city, can be read in our collective progress. And collective means the city, the county, utility customers, legislators, advocates, the utilities themselves, away from yesterday's fuels of coal and gas and toward tomorrow's fuels of solar efficiency and wind and other renewables. So good for us, good for the city, good for the county, good for Portland General Electric and Pacific Power. They get credit for turning away from yesterday's fuels and facing forward. Importantly, the city and county resolutions recognize that while poorly crafted carbon reduction policies can be regressive and harmful to low-income households, climate disruption is more regressive still and relentlessly so. So we have to split that difference in creative ways. In this consideration. I commend to you Vice Chair Vega Peterson's language amending the county resolution this morning and addressing some of these issues. And I further commend to you, I think, some amending language you will probably hear proposed later on this afternoon for the city to set up a youth climate council, since they're the ones that have the biggest stake in this future. They ought to also have a voice. So now city, county, and state policy leadership across the country is going to have to stand in for the present failure of national leadership and character on climate policy. But Multnomah County and the city of Portland will have plenty of company. By my calculation, something significantly in excess of 50% of the states across the country and well over 50% of citizens and many cities and counties, urban and rural, in states that are not part of that number are standing up and taking responsibility for moving our climate policies and accomplishments forward and, frankly, rendering the national government irrelevant on this issue. The city and the county are also going to have help from technology and market forces that are driving clean energy sources into production and driving their costs down. As I said this morning, it's everywhere from 60 to 90% cost reductions just since 2008 for wind, for solar, for lithium-ion battery technology, for light bulbs, and for many more of the technologies that you and we will collectively rely on. And I will close today, as I did this morning, by reading you a short comment from yesterday's New York Times, a statement that, frankly, I never thought I would live long enough to either read or recite. This is from a Times article talking about how wind is reshaping the energy grid, and it references Secretary of Energy Perry as raising the possibility of federal intervention in energy markets to protect coal and nuclear plants against low-priced wind. Enough said. Carry on. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you very much.
We have one more panel question.
The next panel, Maya Rybeck, Dean Funk, and Alan Ippolito. Come on up.
Am I going first?
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Go ahead. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, for having us here today. My name is Mia Reback, and I'm a staff organizer with 350 PDX. We're the local chapter of the international organization 350.org, working in almost every continent to build a grassroots climate movement. We believe that solutions to climate change have always and will always come from the ground up. And so in December of 2015, at the same time when world leaders were gathering to sign the Paris Climate Accord, almost 1,000 Portlanders marched in the wettest, coldest day that December to really commit to implementing Paris through local action. And so I'm really excited and inspired that we're here today doing just that. The Paris Climate Agreement set a goal to limit global warming between 1.5 and 2 degrees Celsius, and we know that that agreement is only as good as its implementation. And with all things climate, the devil is in the details. And so I'm really excited that we're here today with lots of stakeholders in the room to get those details right. The City of Portland, we're building today on a legacy of great climate action from our internationally recognized climate action plan to the city policy opposing new fossil fuel infrastructure in our city. We've divested from the fossil fuel industry, and today we get to say yes. Yes to a clean and renewable energy economy. But in making that transition, we have to ensure that we're not creating another social or an environmental injustice along the way. And so I'm going to be speaking out in support of a handful of amendments to the policy as it's written. One issue that you're going to hear a lot about today has to do with forests and biomass, and we'd like to see the City of Portland matching its resolution to the county opposing biomass feedstocks sourced from public lands, both our state and federal lands. We also would like to support, along with Northwest Seed, any amendments that will protect low-income utility customers, as well as ensuring that our path towards community-based renewable energy is done right and with full support from environmental justice organizations, and you'll be hearing more about that in today's hearing. The Climate Action Plan sets a goal to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 3% every year towards 2050. But as time goes on and the climate crisis gets worse, so must our work to address climate change. With recent studies now showing that we actually need to be reducing our greenhouse gas emissions closer to 6 or 10% each year to not cross some of these critical climate tipping points. So it's really inspiring that we are building on this climate action plan, doing more, going further, and setting a strong, really bold and ambitious renewable energy goal. The real impacts of climate change are reflected in this resolution. And as I mentioned in my testimony to the county today, it shocks me every time I read these resolutions to hear that Oregon is predicted to have a 10-degree Fahrenheit temperature rise in my lifetime. I was born in 1992, the same year our first climate action plan was passed. And if no action is taken, if we continue on a business-as-usual path, if I live to the age of my grandmother's, Oregon will warm 10 degrees Fahrenheit, dramatically changing life as we know it. And so I'm really glad that we're in this room today committing to not go down that path, saying that we will completely transition off of all fossil fuels by the year 2050 and onto clean and renewable energy. Thank you all so much for your support. It means a lot.
Thanks, Mia. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My name is Dean Funk. I manage the local government affairs group at Portland General Electric. I've been at PG since before the first Portland Multnomah County Climate Action Plan was introduced in 1992. And either me or one of my colleagues has testified in support of that plan, if not at every update, at most of them, I'm proud to say. Today's action by the city and county is more important than ever. If the U.S. does indeed, and apparently it has, withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement, it is a step in the wrong direction. PG was among the first energy companies to advocate for climate legislation at the national level, and the importance of national and international response has only grown in the last decade. The threat of climate change demands an international response, and it is disheartening, to say the least, to see our country move backwards. We are committed to doing our part to combat climate change by powering this region with clean, reliable, and affordable energy, and will continue to work with our customers to meet Oregon's progressive clean energy standards. At the beginning of March, I was in a meeting with the mayor, with PG CEO Jim Pyro and our VP of Public Policy, Dave Robertson. There was a short conversation about achieving the State Global Warming Commission goal of 80% reduction of greenhouse gases below 1990 levels by 2050. And PG is on a path to meet those goals, but beyond 2040, things get a little hazy. And Mayor Wheeler observed, and I paraphrase, "Well, that's for our kids to figure out the rest of the way." I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
An acknowledgement, I think, that we don't know the technologies the future may bring. Despite that uncertainty, we are committed to helping our region lead the way in an effort to combat climate change. In early April, I think it's important to note, when our CEO, Jim Pyro, first heard of the city and county 100% renewable goal, the first words out of his mouth were, "If that's what they want to do, then we're going to help them do it." Both Mayor Wheeler's comment and Jim Pyro's comments illustrate something important. Regardless of what happens at the federal level, our region will continue to lead the way by finding innovative solutions that strengthen our economy and protect our environment. And we are committed to figuring out how to build a cleaner energy future and figure it out together with the city and the county and our customers and community stakeholders who care deeply about the future for our kids and our grandkids. And while we don't exactly know how technology is going to evolve in the coming decades, or exactly how we're going to meet these goals, we know that we are going to move forward in a way that ensures affordability, reliability, equitable opportunities to share in a new clean energy economy. I want to thank the mayor, Chair Cafore, Commissioners Vega Peterson and Udaly, and their staffs for allowing us the opportunity to contribute to the process that created the final version of this resolution. As we move ahead into uncharted waters, it is extremely important that we retain flexibility so that we can find the best path forward together. Let's be clear. No one, not even the most distinguished energy expert, knows exactly how to get to 100% renewable energy right now. And so as we go forward, we're going to have to be nimble and make sure our policies are flexible so that we can continue to adapt as technologies advance. It's also important that we work together. I want to thank particularly Commissioner Vega Peterson, John Washtinsky, and Nathan Howard, among others, for facilitating input from a wide variety of groups. Over the last few weeks, several of us from PG met with stakeholder groups who might naturally be suspicious of a large utility's commitment to clean energy. Over the course of those meetings, I think that we've built up some mutual respect, and I hope that we can continue to build those relationships as we move forward together. I think that the resolution you're considering today is much stronger because of the input that it has been received, and I hope that we can continue to have an open, collaborative process as we work to implement these goals. Customers, stakeholders, and PG, we all want clean, safe, reliable, and affordable energy. And we're only going to be able to make progress if we work together with respect for our institutions, for our culture, for our uniquely Oregon sense of community collaboration. I believe we got to today on the shoulders of a lot of great work done in the last 25 years. I don't believe that Portland is the recipient of the C40 Best Climate Action Plan in the world in 2017 without a community, including PG and our customers, being fully committed to taking initiative to take action ahead of the curve. And I especially don't believe we would have had this resolution in a workable form today, nor a climate action plan that is the envy of the world, without the sure, steady, wise, and relentless work of Michael Armstrong from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I want to offer my personal thank you to Michael for his work and his deep integrity toward making
He's
the
blushing
world.
Back there.
It's such
blushing.
Urbane compliments he's getting.
Back there. He does not like this kind of thing, I know. It is an honor, really, and a pleasure to have worked with him over the last few decades, and I know he's going to a place that's just going to make this all better for worldwide. I hope that his colleagues at the city and the county and my colleagues at PG will continue to seek his wise counsel as we move down this pathway. Last week, I was attending an internal meeting with my colleagues at PG, who are part of a newly formed work group under the meeting moniker Journey to 100%. There's 8 to 10 of us around the table, and I realize that the second oldest person to me is probably 20 years younger than I am. Not surprisingly, with arguably the issue of our time being energy and climate, the level of talent we're attracting at PG is nothing short of astonishing. It really is remarkable. I know you're seeing it too, within the city and the community. Within PG, there's a palpable excitement in the room about tackling this challenge. PG's Franco Albee coined the phrase Journey to 100, and I think it captured very well what Mayor Wheeler said on March 3rd. We're headed in the right direction, but it is going to be a journey. And as I look around, I know we're in good hands, from the leadership at the county and the city to the activists and stakeholders to our staff at PG. We have a very smart, very engaged group of people who are going to lead the way forward together, just as Michael Armstrong and others have done for the last 25 years. We're in this journey with you. It's a journey in part into the unknown. We can do this together, but only together as a community, as the work toward this resolution itself has demonstrated. So let's get going. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Dean, I'd just like to reflect on what you've just said for a moment. The PGE and the utilities generally have been tremendously supportive of our climate action plan goals. And I really want to just appreciate back the good and hard work that you and your team have put into this and help us understand there's a balance here that's a very difficult one for the utilities in terms of both ensuring that we get to that 100% renewable energy target while at the same time trying not to price lower-income people out of the market as utility ratepayers. And you've asked us for that attention to flexibility and balance. And I just want to underscore that we understand that and we appreciate it. And we're so thankful that we have utility leaders in this part of the country that support this kind of effort. So I want to thank you for
that.
And I want to thank you for your strong statement and your commitment to these efforts. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners. I regret that I don't have any urbane considered compliments for Michael Armstrong in my testimony, but my name is Alan Ippolito. I work for a tax-exempt nonprofit named Verde. We're located in Northeast Portland's Cully neighborhood. Lately, I like to tell folks that I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, in the United States. And my father is from a town called Tamazunchale in the state of San Luis Potosí in Mexico, and my mother is from New Orleans. In the words of your friend and mine, Rey España, it's a blessing to be here with you today. I'd like to talk a little bit about the process that we used to get today. Here we are, and then to talk about our priorities for this resolution. We've had a strong opportunity in these last couple of weeks to work both with city and county staff to explore this, what we think is very exciting new territory of community-based development of renewable energy infrastructure. And I really appreciate the strength of that dialogue and the kind of unpacking that we're doing together on something that is being prioritized in a lot of environmental justice communities, but I think we have an opportunity to really move things forward. We come to this resolution with three priorities. One, as other folks have mentioned, is to protect low-income ratepayers, and so we did a good amount of work over the last week together with CAPO, the Community Action Partnership of Oregon, with the Coalition of Communities of Color, and with Northwest Seed to draft language, both a whereas and a be it resolved, that were included in the county's resolution, and we'd very much like to see that language incorporated in the city's resolution. We need to send a marker about protecting our ratepayers and calling them out, specifically our low-income ratepayers. But we also recognize that this resolution sets the stage, a restorative stage. We're recognizing that low-income people and people of color not only are on the front lines of climate change, but they have not participated in the growth of our renewable energy economy or in the development of policies that have led to that growth. And so we're also prioritizing and are grateful for the language about economic inclusion for our minority-owned businesses, our women-owned businesses, and our workforce. We understand that for many reasons, a lot of this goal will be met via big projects, big institutions, big partners. If Portland State University gets together with Johnson Controls and PGE and comes to you and says, we want to solarize PSU. Now, there's a lot of good reasons to do that, right? But that's a hard arena for our community-facing organizations to participate. So obviously we need to create very, very strong inclusive mechanisms so that our businesses and our workers can grow with that economy that we as a community, as a government, are incenting its growth, right? We're coming to the marketplace saying we want something. But some of us can't compete in that sector effectively. And so what we're trying to do is to open up a new playing field where community-based organizations, where community-facing organizations can compete for these resources so that they can adapt renewable energy infrastructure to their own priorities. And I want to be clear, we pursue generative capacity. The ability to drive renewable energy infrastructure into low-income people and people of color neighborhoods in response to that specific community's priorities, which may be health, may be education, may be housing, may be economic opportunity. I think we all can imagine a future where renewable energy infrastructure is actually a key piece of how we fund new affordable housing. So we do not support the additional language in the substitute draft around transportation, food waste management, industrial processing, heating, and electricity investments, because we believe it deflects us from our goal to have this generative capacity in our neighborhoods. And we also think it is not aligned with the rest of the content of the resolution, which clearly spells out what is and is not renewable energy, but then chooses here on community-based development of renewable energy infrastructure to add new content. And also, there's a clear progression in our mind where in the be it resolved, we're talking about 100% of community-wide energy needs by 2050 with renewable energy, 100% of communities' electric energy needs through renewable energy by 2035, 100% from city operations from renewable energy, prioritizing renewable resources. But then when we get to the community, all of a sudden we've expanded the definition about what's possible or what field we're playing in. So we seek generative capacity. So the last few things I will say is let's also be clear that our existing toolkit, we know it's inadequate, and we need to grow it, and we need to change it. And that's why projects like the solar installation at NEA, the solar installation at Hacienda CDC's futsal court, the Junqui Delta, are exceptions to our renewable energy practice. And they take years of painstaking effort by community-based organizations to cobble together those resources that are accessible to community. We want to flip that. We want to see broad investments by and of community as a function of this transition. This will be very hard work, harder than the work we've done to get to this content that's in front of you. And I would also say that for government and utility and other stakeholders, if this isn't the energy system you thought you would be regulating or operating or financing or building, let's talk about that. Let's figure it out. But let's not accept arguments of infeasibility. Justice rejects limits. This kind of thinking is the same kind of stuff that in the past told us you can't remove a freeway and build a riverfront park. A city can't have a climate action plan. Who does that? That a low-income community can't convert a 25-acre landfill into a park? Your daughter will never be able to marry her girlfriend. We as a community, we can't unite against hate. And it's the same kind of thinking that says that people of color can't develop and lead a renewable energy agenda.
Thank you. We appreciate it. We have Commissioner Fudge. We have one final invited guest, Kevin Lynch. Come on up, sir. Thank you for your patience.
Of course. I get the whole table to myself as a result.
There you go.
It's a great deal.
Don't forget to thank
Mayor.
Michael.
I'm sorry.
Don't forget to thank Michael.
Yes, and if you have any embarrassing anecdotes, this is a good time to share them with us as well.
Well, good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners.
Afternoon.
My name is Kevin Lynch, and I'm the head of external affairs for a company called Avangrid Renewables, which until recently was Iberdrola Renewables. I'll get to that in a minute, but first I want to say as a citizen that I'm heartened by the fact that three of the four jurisdictions in which I live and vote have embraced the challenge to combat climate change, the city of Portland, Multnomah County, state of Oregon. And I guess as far as the fourth one goes, the United States, maybe we can all take solace in the notion that it's darkest before the dawn and that things will change soon. So let's hope. On behalf of Avangrid Renewables, thank you for giving me a couple of minutes to speak to you. A little bit about our company. Across the U.S., we're the second or third, depending on how you keep score, largest generator and provider of renewable electricity. We operate power plants, mostly wind and a few solar, across 19 or 20 states now, with new projects under construction and four more. Here in the state of Oregon, we have a lot of wind power. The number is about 1,000 megawatts. It's kind of hard to describe what that really means, but it's an awful lot. And we are on the cusp of building more and also expanding into building large-scale solar projects here in the state of Oregon. We provide that power to all kinds of entities, utilities, municipal government utility agencies, directly to commercial and industrial customers here in the state of Oregon that want to have a green portfolio and the like. And then locally here in Portland, we have about 350 employees. And thanks to Prosper Oregon, formerly known as the Portland Development Commission, we are going to be here for a long time to come. It's a very exciting place to be. The roots of our business are here. We like to stay here and provide good jobs and run a national renewable energy business from our offices in Northwest Portland. I simply want to say that there are great leaps and bounds that have been made in renewable energy on the electric side in the last couple of years, and there's a lot more that can be done. Oregon is leading the way. You all are doing a great thing in setting this standard and this commitment. But what's remarkable is the technological change that is occurring that is making just the regular old electricity a lot cheaper than it had been before. And the trend appears to be likely to continue downward, and that it is becoming easier to bring more renewable energy overall into the grid, to integrate it, to manage the supply of renewable electricity from wind and solar in particular that doesn't always show up all the time. We can draw on a number of resources, a number of technological improvements, tremendous leaps in information technology to bring more and more renewable energy into the overall power mix.